Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of BlockHash, exploring the blockchain, episode 384. Today with Thomas Blamuth, the fund manager for Enbruggen Capital, to talk about the crypto markets and some of the things that they do within the crypto space. Thomas, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on here and excited to kind of dive into a little bit more about Enbruggen Capital and what you guys are all about, as well as the state of crypto here in 2024. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks for the invitation. Equally excited and looking forward to this conversation.
Before we dive into Enbruggen, would love to learn a bit more about yourself, if you don't mind sharing a little bit with the audience, maybe your backstory, kind of how you got to where you are now with Enbruggen.
Sure. So I'll try to keep it short, but I'm originally from Austria and Europe. I have a background as a business major, a master's degree from a university in Austria. But already during my studies, I've been spending a lot of time abroad. I've been studying in Singapore, in Thailand, did some internship in Germany. And after I graduated, I joined Google in Dublin, in Ireland. And this is the first time in my career that I was looking at, you know, data analytics and so on and so forth. And it's been quite cold in Ireland, so it's a very good company in Google, but I didn't spend a lot of time there because I wanted to go back to Southeast Asia. And then I joined one of the largest e-commerce companies here in Southeast Asia when I was 26 years old, was starting to lead and manage people in the Philippines, to be specific. And so it doesn't sound all too much like a fund manager so far, but I have to say, ever since I graduated, I've been personally investing heavily in the financial markets, right? I've been trading penny stocks, equities, IPOs, and so on and so forth. And eventually it took until 2017 when I started buying Bitcoin for the first time, and suddenly a whole new world has opened up to me. And then basically 2018 was the time that I joined Enbruggen Capital after meeting the shareholders of the company in 2017. And they were also the ones that actually introduced me to this market. And I have to say, ever since, basically all my personal wealth has shifted from traditional markets into the crypto space.
Was there anything about the crypto markets in general that maybe piqued your interest and made you want to do something in this space?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's the volatility, right? So I've not only been investing, I've been also trading a lot of technical analysis and so on and so forth. And coming from penny stocks, right, you appreciate volatility. And ever since I found out about not just Bitcoin, but especially the altcoin sector, like I said already, a whole new world has opened up. And it immediately convinced me that this is going to be my future path moving forward. And that's also when I made the career move more from a technology companies into the financial asset markets.
So what is Enbruggen Capital? So that's where you are now as a fund manager. What's it like working there? Like, what do you guys do? What's your guys' mission? What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, happy to share. So we are actually an asset management company. We have a very strong focus on research and development. I would say now our primary focus is on what we call fundamental research. We study market cycles, technical analysis, we use global macro, to tell a little bit about the story, how everything started, because it took quite some time to get where we are now. So I would say the story started in 2017 with the ICO boom. I'm sure you remember, right? Suddenly left and right, new tokens appeared. Nobody knew exactly what they're doing, right? Everything was based on white papers. And at the same time, the shareholders of Enbruggen Capital, they already successfully invested in, you know, Ethereum, Bitcoin, and so on and so forth. But as soon as the ICO boom happened, they knew they're somehow missing out and they don't have the time to study, 24/7, look at all of these new tokens, whether they are scams or whether they have true potential. But at the same time, they went up by hundreds or even thousands of percent. And that's when the idea came up to start their own trading desk. And then I was also employee number one to actually start hiring and managing the trading department of Unbroken Capital. To tell you a little bit more about how we started. So initially, we didn't really focus on a particular strategy. Our goal has always been to outperform Bitcoin. So it didn't really matter whether it was discretionary trading, options trading, arbitrage, algorithmic trading, whatever you have, right? At the end of the day, we always benchmark with Bitcoin because obviously we know, right, if you cannot outperform Bitcoin, then you might as well just buy Bitcoin, hold it, and call it a day, right, and focus on something else. But the ambition of the shareholders has been to outperform because they knew that there was a lot of opportunity there. So it was a very steep learning curve for us. So initially, we hired a lot of traders, analysts, mostly from a Forex background, TradFi background. It was more, I would say, to be quite frank, more of a retail trading that we tried, right? We did our technical analysis, we draw our patterns on the chart, but soon we realized it wasn't all too successful. I wouldn't say because we haven't been successful ourselves, but also to some extent, there has been a lot of challenges, for example, with the market being 24/7. Some of the breakouts happened during US session while we were based in the Philippines and so on and so forth. And that's when the idea came up to try other strategies and just benchmark them internally. So yeah, I mean, the next one that we did was algorithmic trading. So we benchmarked algorithmic trading with what we call our discretionary trading. Then we tried options, as already mentioned. And we made a pretty long transition into what we call now our fundamental-based strategy. And that's actually the one that we have been successfully running for a couple of years now. And that's also the one that we are, offering to external investors for our private funds.
So is that what you'd say makes Unbroken more unique, is your fundamental investment strategy that you guys have put together?
Yeah, I would say not just the strategy itself, but also the approach. I feel like a lot of other asset management companies, they start right away with a certain strategy in mind. We have been very open-minded. We have years of testing and years of experience and years of internal benchmarking. Like I said already, right, we did not restrict ourselves with regard to what kind of strategies we are going to run. We just picked the one that has worked the best for us. And yeah, I mean, all of our decisions have always been purely data-based, right? There are no emotions involved. We always follow the principle, what we call test, measure, decide. Even now, right, we're still testing a lot of other strategies internally. But obviously the one that we have been scaling the most is what we call the fundamental strategy. And yes, I think that actually makes us stand out because there are still people out there that claim that there are no fundamentals in crypto, right? Which obviously is no longer the case.
And do you guys invest directly into crypto assets or do you also or primarily invest into things like trust funds or ETFs or things like that?
Yeah, so I cannot disclose too much, right, because we are a private fund, but definitely we focus on liquid tokens. There is always risks associated with locking up your tokens, and we definitely prefer to have the flexibility. Also because, especially in the last couple of years, there have been a lot of black swan events, right? So we definitely want to have the funds in our own hands and be able to risk off as needed. We don't want to lock up our tokens as much as necessary.
Well, let's take a look at the crypto market a little bit as well. You know, as someone that is, I guess, got their eye on the ball all the time, you know, this year must be very fun and interesting given the last couple of years in the bear market and everything being so quiet and low volume and having less activity as in typical bear markets go. What's it been like for you guys this year, seeing the growth in the markets, and then what are you guys kind of looking for or maybe anticipating to happen this year?
So it feels like you always have a certain thesis in mind, right? And right now it feels like the thesis is just literally playing out. I think everybody has been bullish on the ETFs, but nobody really estimated to what extent they're going to shape the market, right? It was not just the run-up into the ETF approval, but I think the biggest surprise, which in hindsight shouldn't be a surprise, is actually to what extent the price just kept going up and the flows just came or continue to come in. There have been all these, stories out there, right? Whenever a new product like ETF futures contracts, for example, or when the Coinbase IPO happened, that always marked the local top, right? And as soon as we saw the ETF approval, right, there was a bit of a sell the news event, but it didn't take all too long. And now it's just literally 2 days ago, right, that Bitcoin was able for the first time ever to temporarily exceed, but at least to hit the all-time high even before the halving. So definitely it's been fun for us, right? We are fundamentally bullish. We are long, basically crypto, right? And we continue to stay long until we see, you know, some warning signs, and it really feels like the thesis is playing out. I think other aspects that make this cycle different is now that it really feels like, thanks to the ETFs, Bitcoin and crypto in general has become mainstream, right? You don't get laughed at anymore when you're investing in crypto. At the same time, it feels like the halving this time gets front run already, right? It's in everybody's mind. And yeah, I mean, also some people are talking about, you know, the cycles to shorten or to be what they call left translated. Yeah, looks like it, to be honest, right now. But yeah, I don't know. It's still very early, right? We know that in average after the halving, it takes approximately 500 days, at least historically, until Bitcoin makes the final top. And yeah, at some point, I mean, obviously there is going to be a correction, right? Be it time-based, be it price-based. But yeah, I mean, to some extent, it feels like the cycle has been accelerating and everybody's front-running each other.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point in time because this is the first cycle where it's not driven exclusively by the retail market. It's actually being driven by institutional players dumping money into this industry, especially into Bitcoin. And that, you know, who knows what that does for the typical market cycle for Bitcoin and the crypto market, you know, whether it shortens it or extends it. But it's been fascinating to watch that play out and see Bitcoin start to overperform this early before its halving cycle, actually, and to see that reflected a little bit more in the altcoin market, kind of seeing things shift there as well. And still not seeing the retail hype quite yet jump into it. And Bitcoin has already gone through its all-time high just briefly. It's crazy to me because 3 years ago, people were dapping hands and laser eyes and, you know, going crazy at these prices. And now no one is batting an eye. It's like, is it just getting started? Like, what do you guys see happening from here? It's kind of like an uncharted territory in some ways.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think retail to some extent is still sidelined, right? Crypto is not talk of town. Yes, obviously for us who are looking at crypto every day, I mean, we are already quite happy that Bitcoin went to the all-time highs, but I think the retail really is just going to enter once Bitcoin is either going to break the all-time high or be the 100K, I don't know, at some point they're going to enter, right? We are monitoring a lot of other metrics. You mentioned the altcoin market. It's actually one of our expertise to invest in altcoins, right? Not just Bitcoin and Ethereum. Yes, we play the market cycles, but I think our core strength and expertise is actually in identifying certain narratives early on, right? We see a lot of focus in this cycle right now on AI, for example, on RWAs, decentralized physical infrastructure, and so on and so forth. And I mean, I think it's just a matter of time, right? Human greed always returns at some point, right? There was not a single cycle so far that did not enter at Bitcoin dominance at the low. And right now, Bitcoin dominance is still at one of the highest points in the last couple of years, right? So from an altcoin point of view, I think the cycle is just getting started. From a Bitcoin point of view, it looks like it's already at the, you know, halfway through. But again, I think these, you know, left translated cycle or shortening cycle theories might be falsified again. Obviously, we are monitoring, right? If the cycle top happens earlier, we will be prepared. But personally, if I had to guess right now, I don't think it's going to happen.
In regards to the ETFs, maybe how do you think that affects Bitcoin now going forward? Like, does that, you know, completely change the dynamic of, you think, how Bitcoin gets invested into and maybe how its price will shape up in the future? Because we know it's very cyclical. We know it's very dominated by its halving event and by its tokenomics model. But again, largely driven by retail in the past and now with institutional players involved. Do you think that that starts to change? Do you think Bitcoin starts to stabilize at some point, or its cycles start to differentiate a little bit more? You know, as experts, how do you think these ETFs affect Bitcoin long term?
Yeah, long term, absolutely. I think that the volatility is going to go down. Right now, we see the exact opposite. So what I think is happening right now, I believe Bitcoin has been undervalued for quite some time, and it's right now catching up to its intrinsic value. I also believe that the previous cycle has been relatively underwhelming. If there wouldn't have been, you know, some black swan events, right, I believe the price would have already gone higher. And right now, I think we are actually seeing a mean reversion to where Bitcoin is supposed to be. And I believe that's way beyond the 100K. Yes, I also believe that the volatility is going to go down at some point. It might be at the end of this cycle and then starting into the next cycles already, which then again is why we look into altcoins. But I also think that what's very interesting about the ETFs is that technically, maybe people that just start investing now, they might not care about these historical narratives, right? Like, you know, Bitcoin cannot break all-time high before halving and those kind of things. I mean, why would you care, right? You look at the chart of an ETF, it's only a few days old, right? A couple of weeks old. And I mean, it's already in blue skies territory, as we call it, right? There's no resistance if you only chart Bitcoin now on the ETFs. So I'm not sure, I mean, if those people... It's interesting, right? Because if you would look purely on technical analysis now, there is definitely some warning signs, right? The funding rates are elevated. There is extreme greed in the market, right? There is bearish divergence as some indicators, which might want to make you already risk off. But then again, the flows just keep incoming. And we see some days where there's like 10 times more Bitcoins being absorbed by the ETFs than are even produced, you know, by the miners on a given day. And I think as soon as the flows just keep coming in, right, I don't see how Bitcoin is going to stop going up, at least for the meantime.
There's obviously a lot of movements starting to happen for the first time in the last couple of years now, since 2021. I think Ethereum and Cardano probably had some of the best performances as of late, showing a lot of strength. And there's also a lot of talk that they might get their own ETFs as well, because everyone's wondering what's going to come after the Bitcoin ETF, given its success, the fact that it's pace by pace outperforming gold's ETF. When the gold ETF first came out, like, everything's like on track to far surpass that. So with that success and them now looking at other altcoins, Ethereum, Cardano, et cetera, to potentially attach an ETF to at some point, do you think that's something that's likely to happen here in 2024 as like a very quick follow-up on that success? Or do you think that that's just a little bit of hype right now because of the excitement?
No, I think everybody is now hoping, expecting to some extent, right, that the ETH ETF is going to get approved again, because the reasoning for the ETF approval for Bitcoin was actually that it's a conversion of the Grayscale fund into an ETF, right? And there is not really much of a reason why the same shouldn't apply for Ethereum. And as you know, right, Ethereum is always a proxy for the altcoin market in general. So obviously, as somebody that is fundamentally bullish on a lot of altcoins, of course, I do not only expect, but to some extent also hope that the ETF is going to get approved for Ethereum as well. And as you mentioned already, who knows which other ETFs are going to follow.
Same here. We spoke with Grayscale about a month ago on the podcast, and they had mentioned that they're actively looking at those things. And clearly, they've converted over their Bitcoin trust to a Bitcoin ETF quite successfully. And so I know that they're looking at their other trusts that have actually performed quite well over the bear market as well, that they want to convert over. So I think we might see a lot of those things sooner than later. I want to ask you about the Federal Reserve in the U.S. a little bit, if you don't mind, because interest rates in the U.S. are jacked up super high. And the U.S. economy is a leading economy here in crypto and really dictates whether people are able to free up capital to invest into the market, especially for retail. With rates being so high and inflation, you know, the dollar is very expensive. And so people don't speculate as much into investments. But the Fed is under a lot of pressure to cut those rates at some point, maybe here in 2024, earlier the better. But they've been, you know, kind of pushing it off a little bit. So I'm just kind of curious if you think maybe that could be a black swan type of event this year that might also be incredibly bullish for crypto and continuing to maybe pump fuel into this market. Like, do you think that that's something that's, you know, bound to happen here in 2024? Do you think it's something that's highly impactful, minimally impactful? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, historically, of course, we're monitoring what the Fed does very closely, right? Not just what they do, but also what they say, and then what investors think is going to happen, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months down the road, which to some extent matters even more, right? At the end of the day, everything that the Fed does translates into liquidity, right? At the end of the day, liquidity is what drives the actual price. Personally, I don't have a strong opinion whether they're going to cut rates or not. The only thing I hope is not going to happen is for them to increase rates. I think that's the only thing that you never know, right? If inflation is going to spike at some point, I mean, that's the one thing that I would, yeah, definitely hope for the market to avoid. Other than that, I'm quite pleased to see Bitcoin going up while TXY has been quite strong, while inflation was still high, and while the interest rates are still high. So that gives me not all too much room of concern whether rates stay high. The only thing I don't want to see is for them, to whatever reason, suddenly increase rates again. Other than that, there have been times in the past where the Fed was actually forced to cut rates because something broke. So that's also, there are times where cutting rates has been very bullish, right? There are also times because of a crisis, they were forced to cut rates. So if that's the case, then again, it's probably not even the preferred scenario. And some people might be surprised that cutting rates might be less bullish than they expect. So personally, as long as Bitcoin keeps going up and rates stay the same, yeah, I will take it.
What other black swan type of events do you maybe foresee being a possibility in 2024 that could affect markets either positively or negatively? We got tons of geopolitical concerns. We have elections in the US coming up this year. We have everything from proxy wars to bad markets and recessions looming. What do you think could happen in 2024 of all the possibilities, things that maybe are on your guys' radar that you look for, you know, as a fund?
Yeah, I have to disappoint you. I'm not going to exactly answer the question, right? Because I'm a very opportunistic person. So yes, we prepare for certain risks, but black swans also means that you cannot foresee them, right? Yes, you can prepare for certain outcomes, but the black swan is usually the one that you don't expect. So that's number one. Number two is we had a black swan in the previous cycle. Now everybody is somehow waiting for another black swan. What if there is a white swan? So I'm much more thinking this time there might not be. And yes, that might be famous last words, and I hope I'm not going to jinx it, right? But there might be no black swan this time around, but rather a white swan. The white swan for me is, you know, things that are unexpected as well. But on the positive side, be it some other nations after El Salvador, right, suddenly announcing that they are going to accept Bitcoin as a, you know, reserve currency, or another MicroStrategy, you know, other companies starting to put Bitcoin on their reserves. These kind of things. Yes, obviously, we can always talk about risks, right? I mean, there could be a war, there could be other, you know, another COVID, all these kind of things. But I really hope and I firmly believe that this was more of a once in a, you know, once in a generation kind of event. And yes, we have obviously our risk management in place, right? We monitor all kind of news, events, rumors, and so on and so forth. But to specifically tell you a black swan that I expect, that's not exactly where my focus is on right now.
Where would your focus be on, would you say, mostly at the moment of all the things that are going on?
Yeah, since the cycle is already happening, right? I mean, my focus is already in a potential cycle top. There was a lot of focus in the last cycle on a certain magic number. You know, everybody was expecting 100K. Everybody was following the stock to flow model. The cycle is already playing out, right? And I think the momentum is very strong. The biggest challenge is for people to get out at some point, right? And this is where our focus is already, be it 6 months, 12 months, 18 months from now, right? We have to be prepared. And for us, obviously, the strategy is always data-based, right? We use a combination of macro, on-chain indicators, technical analysis, fear and greed. We have our own indicators that we develop in-house. And I think that's where the focus is already, you know, always six to 12 months ahead of what you actually see on the charts right now.
What do you think about the potential for other niches within crypto to perform well? Obviously, in the last bull market, to give you an example, DeFi was huge. NFTs were huge. Those were massive market drivers, especially for retail. Is there anything that stands out within the crypto industry, whether it's those things or something different, that you think could lend a lot of additional value and juice to this bull cycle?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I think some of the narratives are still the same, right? I believe that gaming tokens still have a potential. You can also see that gaming tokens usually go up a lot in value, but very late, at the very late stage of the cycle. That's obviously because that's when retail enters the market, right? And they most likely are not going to buy Bitcoin when it's already that expensive. From their point of view, gaming is something that is easy to understand. It's fun, right? It's viral. You know, you can play around with NFTs and so on and so forth. So I think that's one of the sectors that is going to make a strong comeback. I would not underestimate DeFi. I believe it still has a very important point in the market. Other layer ones, right? Obviously, Solana and so on and so forth are probably going to make a comeback. And then some of the new narratives, I think the one that dominates obviously right now is AI. If you look at the earnings, the latest earnings from NVIDIA, it's been, you know, one for the record books again. And pretty much any token right now that focuses on the AI narrative, be it very early stage, be it based on a roadmap alone, right? We see a lot of capital flowing into it. And very interestingly, I mean, it's the first cycle also where I believe people are not making too much fun of meme coins anymore. Now, of course, that's a very tricky one, right? Because you need to do your due diligence as well, right? But there's definitely some meme coins out there that at least retail investors are going to go very heavily into it. And yeah, if I remember 2021, right, Bitcoin already made the first stop in April. And some of the meme coins were just born, right? There was Shiba that still made a couple of 1,000%. There was Samo, the first dog coin on Solana, for example, that made a couple of 1,000% on the Solana blockchain. And those tokens were only born in 2021, right? So same now, there might be a lot of tokens for the remainder of the cycle that are not even in existence right now, and that retail is going to jump on again when it comes to, you know, the end stage of the cycle.
Yeah, meme coins have been wild. Just in the past week, you know, Doge and Shiba, like 30% up, 20% down, 15 up, 30 down. Like it's been a wild past 7 days or so.
Yeah, what's, maybe if I may add, so what's interesting there is because there is still this, you know, I'm sure you know it, this traditional money flow cycle out there, right? That money usually flows from US dollar into Bitcoin, Ethereum, other large caps, small caps, mid caps, and then into the meme coin market. Very interestingly, right now it happens to be the case that many times the funds flow straight into the meme coins, right? So it's like either you go for the conservative Bitcoin route or you go straight for the most potentially rewarding but also potentially most destructive asset, which are meme coins.
One more question before we start wrapping up the episode. This is more of a fun question, but what's it like in the daily life of a fund manager for someone like you?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely no day like another, right? I think everyone who is in crypto knows that it's a 24/7 market and you never know, you know, you go to sleep, you wake up at some point and Bitcoin is, you know, $5,000 up, 10% down, and so on and so forth. So I would say there's definitely some kind of routine. I mean, we have a team, right? We have our research team, we have our portfolio management team. If it's a normal day, relatively normal, right? We have our meetings, we talk about our research pipeline, we look at our portfolio, we look at certain metrics. I might have conversations with third-party suppliers, be it exchanges, banks. We also have a lot of focus on security aspects, investor relations, podcast, right, which we are doing right now. But definitely, there's a lot of times that the days are not like any other, right? That's when you wake up, something happens, and you immediately jump on it, right? You have a meeting with your team, and you try to figure out, is it something that you know you need to react on, or is it something, which is just relatively normal, right? But obviously, if another FTX, Binance issues, SEC cases, hacks, and all these kind of things happen, right, and you wake up, then obviously that's where you focus on, right, you know, straight away. But there's definitely some calmer days, right? But I think right now the volatility is high. So, yeah, many times you wake up in the morning and the price is not exactly where it was before you fell asleep.
Oh, yeah. That's the tricky thing about this market is it's 24/7. And there's another market that's trading it while you're asleep. And I've lost a lot of nights trying to trade, having to wake up at 1, 2, 3 in the morning because I don't know. And the Asia markets are spiking or they're selling off and it's quite a headache. Like, how do you guys manage that? Do you have someone that's up like 24/7 or do you just use tech these days to kind of monitor that stuff?
No, so it's actually, to some extent, it's factored in, right, in our risk management models, in our, you know, diversification and so on and so forth. We stomach the volatility to some extent, as long as it's not a black swan. I think the volatility is part of the game, right? It's the reason why we see opportunity and we don't get nervous by, you know, these 2%, 5% moves up or down. I think one of the advantages is we stopped using leverage. It was always part of our testing. As I mentioned initially, we benchmarked internally a lot, right? To some extent, of course, leverage gives you opportunity, but I believe the risks are very extreme. And especially in the 24/7 market, it's something that you need to very carefully manage. And we've learned that for us, the spot only strategy, by focusing on undervalued or small cap tokens that we see a lot of upside, that gives us the best reward. And volatility is part of the game.
Where can people go to check out In Bruggen Capital if they want to learn a bit more? They watched an episode and they're curious. Maybe there's an investor out there that would like to get in contact with you guys. Where would you direct people?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to get started is literally just our website, right? It's unbruggen.capital. We can take it from there, right? We have our LinkedIn page, obviously. But the easiest way is literally just to reach out and, take a look at our website.
Thomas, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today and talk about In Bruggen Capital and kind of what makes you guys different and unique, as well as the crypto markets out there and what's kind of going on. This will be a very interesting and eye-opening episode for a lot of people. So thank you for taking the time to share.